Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway and a special guest who we'll introduce in just a minute. Together, we'll be talking about a clash of values that we are seeing in Virginia and across America. That clash can be described in different ways on different issues, but for our purposes today, we'll focus on what are often described as social issues. Now, these include differences about the sanctity of life, about marriage and the family, about our faith, our freedom, and the role of government in our lives. Now, as many of you know, we have enjoyed working with the Family Foundation in Richmond on these issues for over 15 years, but particularly with Vice President Chris Friend when the Virginia General Assembly meets for several months at the beginning of each year. Now, as we mentioned at another time, Chris has been a guest on Crossroads many times, but after he left the foundation earlier this year, Josh Hetzler took on many of Chris's responsibilities as the new legislative counsel for the Family Foundation. So, we're delighted to have Josh with us today to help explain this clash of values in Virginia, and also to give us a final report on the 2018 Virginia General Assembly session, which just ended last month. Josh, welcome to Crossroads.
Thank you. Good to be with you all.
Well, Josh, since this is your debut on Crossroads, can you start by just telling us a little about yourself? What drew you to the Family Foundation, and just a general description of your responsibilities as legislative counsel?
Sure. Many of you are probably familiar with Liberty University. It's growing quite large there in Lynchburg. I began going there in undergrad and decided to continue on to law school. So I spent 7 years there, and you know, the Lord really did a lot in my life to grow me and show me what I was really interested in doing. Spent a lot of time doing government and politics. And pretty early on in my life, I really have been noticing this sort of erosion of our culture in a pretty profound way on things that are of utmost importance. And as a person of faith, I couldn't help but notice the persecution in various ways. We don't experience it so severely in the United States as they do elsewhere, but I could see this sort of encroachment, this hostility towards those of faith, particularly of Christianity. And so when I was in law school at Liberty, I was watching very closely this issue of marriage. I think it was only in 2003 that California became the first state to adopt so-called same-sex marriage. And in a very short time, that issue had begun to sweep the nation. And in my third year of law school, I felt that I needed to do what I could. And so I put together what I called a law and marriage seminar. And I brought in a lot of speakers, and I wanted to highlight this issue of marriage and the law. And this was just prior to a court in Virginia declaring to be unconstitutional. And after 7 years of being at Liberty, I just felt like, gosh, I've been in school a long time. I got to get out there and do something about this. I just really got to get in the fight. And wouldn't you know it, as I was in the middle of studying for the bar exam, the case of Obergefell versus Hodges at the Supreme Court, they redefined marriage, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it was very discouraging because I was almost there. I was almost out, and I wanted to do something about this, and it was done. But, of course, that was really only the beginning of a lot of the things that have been unfolding since that decision, attacks on faith and the family. And someone had invited me to the Family Foundation annual gala and introduced me to the Family Foundation, and I found that they were looking to hire an attorney. And so I followed up with them, and when I got my bar results in October 31st, 2015, soon thereafter I got a call from the Family Foundation, and so I came on with them and started lobbying, and then came on as the legislative counsel. And my role has been continually developing. They didn't have an attorney on staff before, but it has been a lot of policy, lobbying at the General Assembly. We are involved in a lawsuit against the Department of Health over abortion center regulations, and hopefully I'll talk a little bit more about that later, and just a variety of policy issues. And of course, you mentioned since Chris has left us now after 16 years, I've picked up even more things, but yeah, a lot of issues and a lot of attacks on issues that we deal with.
Well, Josh, I remember somebody saying, God does not call whom he has not prepared. And it sounds like he has really called you in that field that you were so interested in preparing for. So let's get in to some of the core principles. You've touched on several of them, but we can drill a little deeper on them. What are some of the core principles that the Family Foundation works to promote in Virginia, and why are they so important? You have five of them, for example, on your website.
Yes, and you can go to our website. It's www.familyfoundation.org. And on there, you will see our mission and vision, our principles and strategies. We have five core principles. Everything we do, we try to fit within those principles. And the first being life, human life, from fertilization to natural death. We believe that it's sacred, that the right to life is fundamental to all other rights. And the second is marriage. We believe it's a lifelong union between one man and one woman and an institution of God and the foundation for civil society. So the various issues related to marriage we are involved with. Parental authority is the third one. We believe that parents are ultimately responsible for the care and the well-being of their children, and therefore they should be free from intrusive government involvement. The fourth would be the role and jurisdiction of government, or constitutional government. So we believe that the only way to secure our liberty, ultimately, is to ensure that the government stays within its bounds, and that it's limited, and that we follow the rule of law. And finally, religious liberty and rights of conscience are critical and are showing up in a lot of ways these days, but we believe that people do have a fundamental, not just the First Amendment right, but a fundamental and unalienable right to live out their faith and conscience. So those are our five principles, and I'll just mention our mission statement is to empower families in Virginia by applying a biblical worldview and founding principles to culture and to public policy.
That is a great mission, Josh, and those five core principles just form a really strong foundation and framework for what you're doing at the Family Foundation. But let's get into some specifics. What are some of the specific things that you do as an organization to defend and promote those principles?
Well, we do a lot of things over the course of the year, and working in the community with churches, outreach with pastors, and one of the things that is the most obvious that we often think of is we lobby during the General Assembly session at the beginning of the year. Of course, there are around 3,000 bills every year, and we've got to sift through all those in a very short amount of time and see if any of them implicate any of our five principles. And then watch them closely, because bills get changed. Almost every bill gets amended at least once and probably several times throughout the long process, but in a very short time. And so we follow, this year we followed about 150 bills in a 60-day session.
Yeah.
And so we put out talking points. We help get folks to email and call their legislators. We testify. We go speak with the legislators. And then we, throughout the year, we often are going to various boards and commissions and committees that are part of the executive branch. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, there are a lot of agencies who make regulations, and they're going all the time. And
yeah.
So we try to serve as somewhat of a watchdog group for regulations that are being passed under the governor's administration that might threaten those principles, or perhaps might further those principles.
Yeah, that's really important.
If someone's passing laws or regulations, it's much more likely to threaten our principles than to aid them. So I sort of look at at any new law or regulation with an eye of skepticism as a policy analyzer, just to think, okay, here's what it says, but, you know, what is this going to do? Or what might be behind this? Those are some of the things we do. We hold a number of events across the state to educate people and to make sure they're informed. Those are some of the main ways.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. We'll probably get into some of those more specifically in the course of the program, but I know that so much of your focus, at least during the first couple months of the year, January, February, and into March, concentrate on the work that you do with the Virginia General Assembly. So I'd like to talk a little bit more about that. You, of course, have a new situation this year because of last year's elections that left a very narrow split between the Republicans and Democrats in both the Senate, 21-19, with the Republican narrow majority, and again in the House with a split of 51-49 Republicans to Democrats. Now, how, Josh, has that split affected your work? What were some of your top priorities during the assembly, and would you say that you were successful in achieving those goals?
It was definitely one for the record books. I mean, it was a wild and crazy session, one like we haven't seen before. And the election in November really threw everybody for a loop. And it wasn't until, you know, within a few days of the session starting that a name had to be drawn out of a bowl, out of a film canister, to determine essentially who would control the House of Delegates. And I was in the room for that. It was a very, very tense moment. But, of course, it was a 51-49 Republican-controlled House and a 21-19 Republican-controlled Senate. Typically, though not always, the Republicans tend to be the ones who are with us on our issues, but we do have some that are more bipartisan. So obviously that kind of split has a major impact on an organization like ours. So we didn't even know who the leadership would be as far as the speaker. The speaker appoints all of the committee chairs. The chairs are very influential in making a lot of decisions. So there were so many things we didn't know going into it. So we had to do a lot on the fly. And there's just a real late start to the whole thing. Surprisingly, I think we had prepared ourselves for things to be worse than they actually were. And, you know, much credit to the House and Senate leadership on that. I mean, Speaker Cox was phenomenal in many ways in helping us to defeat some of the bad bills. And when you have the majority, you have the Speaker, and then your party usually chairs every one of the committees, and then every committee has a majority. So a 51 majority was absolutely critical in our case. And so we were able to help do some strategic things to help make sure a lot of the bad bills were defeated. It was a lot harder, on the other hand, to pass many pro-life, pro-family bills this year, just because it seemed like everything was dying. With a margin that slim, it's really, really hard to pass legislation.
Let me just comment on that, Josh. You said you consider 150 bills, that you track them. And on your website, it says that you were able to pass, and you've just touched on this, you were able to pass only 27% of the good bills, but you were able to defeat 97% of the bad ones. So it sounds like you spent a lot of time on defense.
Absolutely. It was a very, very much defensive year. We didn't have a whole lot that we were advocating for, just because there was a hesitancy to put in a lot of those bills by some of the members because of they were unlikely to pass. So we spent most of our time trying to defeat all the terrible things, which, frankly, I've always believed is better. It's better to kill bad bills than to pass good ones, because of the nature of the threats to our liberties and to life and marriage and parental authority. We were thrilled at the 97% number. The ones that are included in that 3% had to do with an expansion of gambling in Virginia, although gambling doesn't neatly fit with one of our five principles. We have historically worked on that issue, and there are a lot of reasons why Virginia, over the course of time, has chosen not to expand gambling like other states have, and we believe we're better off for it. But there was that issue, and then we included in that, even though it's not a bill per se, the Medicaid expansion. Now, of course, the budget hasn't been worked out yet, so we'll see. So our percentage could actually go up, but we're working hard on that.
Well, Josh, let's talk for just a minute here a little bit more about the partisan divide in Richmond. One of the things the Family Foundation does that I really appreciate, that it's so useful, is that you publish the report card so that voters can see how their elected officials have actually voted on the issues that they care about. And according to the most recent edition of the report card, Democrats averaged a score of only 17 out of 100 on the core issues that you described a little bit ago, while Republicans scored over 90. So how do you explain that kind of a gap?
We've got to use our time wisely. There are only so many of us. There are 150 legislators, and there are, 150 bills that we're following, and things going on all the time. So we have to use our time and resources wisely. So sometimes we don't necessarily always visit some of those folks on the Democratic side who we know have never voted with us on that particular issue, and it does make it hard. Of course, not all the Republicans are with us on all the issues too, so we have to strategically go after those few individuals who we think are going to be the difference makers on a particular vote, and that's helpful so we don't have to spend time getting to every one of them personally. But there were certainly a few issues where that were very much bipartisan issues, although I think sometimes the Democrats have a little skepticism from the Family Foundation, but we do work with them every chance we can.
Hey, Josh, I'd like to drill a little deeper into Rita's question. How do you explain this wide divide? These are common sense issues, and yet there is such a division. I guess given your years at Liberty, you would be prepared to explain to us how people who are generally self-identified Bible-believing Christians, how they can have such a great difference. Now, you only have a minute to answer that. Go for it.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing we learn a lot about at Liberty, as you mentioned, is the concept of worldviews. And your worldview makes all the difference. And it impacts things like, what do you believe is the proper role of government? And, you know, how far can government go into person's life? What is it authorized to do? Is it limited at all? And, you know, I think the chasm between conservatives and liberals today in American politics is becoming wider and wider. But certainly the Family Foundation, you know, adheres to a biblical worldview in which we would say that, well, the government is important. It's God's servant for our good, but it is limited in its sphere, and so it doesn't really matter if it's doing if it can do something good. That doesn't mean it necessarily should or can do that good thing. That may be reserved to individuals, families, churches, communities. So you know, it seems that when the government, the more the government gets involved, the worse things get. Not always, but that's the general trend. And the less freedom we have. So I think that's a major component of the divide is, what do you believe the role of government really is?
Josh, I just want to jump ahead a little bit. We were going to talk about the Medicaid expansion later, but we're running out of time. Could you, in just a minute, explain how this worldview that you just described affects how we should view Medicaid expansion.
Right. So that goes to the same question. What is the role of government?
Yes.
And there are other spheres of society other than government. There are families, individuals, church, private organizations. If you have, I believe that a biblical worldview would lead you to recognize that the concept of charity really is something that is reserved to individuals in the church. It isn't something that the civil government has the authority to do. So the civil government can't confiscate your property and give it to someone else who it deems to be more deserving of it. That's arbitrary. That's unjust. And almost always, it doesn't actually serve the purpose it's seeking to do. It actually tends to make it worse. It exacerbates the problem that existed already. And so there are a number of moral issues, frankly, with vastly expanding an entitlement program such as Medicaid that, not to mention, we just can't afford it. It's just not good government. It's an expansion of government, and we know whenever the government expands, our liberty shrinks, and we ought to be very careful about that. Even when and I'll assume that everybody has the best intentions, but intentions are not the issue. It's what are the results? What are the incentives that are created with these policies?
Well, Josh, let's bring it home a little bit for our listeners. What about the role of the church in all of this? Especially in the face of efforts to silence the church, we hear all these misguided references to the separation of church and state. What would you say to our listeners is the role of the church and individual Christians in this battle of the worldviews we see playing out around us?
I would say that the conservative Christian much more believes in the separation of church and state than those on the left, because we recognize that there should be a boundary between the two, and that the church ought to have the opportunity to do those charitable things and to take care of the needs of the members of their community and their families. And that whenever the government does that, it actually usurps, it takes away the church's opportunity, and it stands in the place of the church. And we believe that ought not be done. There should be a division there. But if often we hear separation of church and state, and we think, well, that means that I can't bring my faith into the voting booth with me, or I can't impact policy because of that. Well, that's just nonsense. We all have a faith in something, and we all have a worldview, but it's incumbent upon us who have a correct worldview to influence the political process, because we know ultimately it will result in everyone's good. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's a biblical worldview.
Well, we talked about grassroots, getting people involved. You mentioned the church. But I wonder, just as you've traveled around Virginia, what else can and should we at the grassroots level do to help you in your work to promote virtue in the culture and in the public square?
Well, we just hired on our staff, Sean McGuire, as our grassroots coordinator. And he's really picked up the ball on the grassroots side of what we do. And he's really beginning to reach out to people all across the state and establish a real solid network. It's hard to do this, frankly, in nonprofit organizations because of often the turnover rate and resources and so many reasons you can imagine. But we are really doubling down on this. And Sean's going to be reaching out to a lot of people, and yeah, we send out email alerts, and really the best way to get connected with us is to go on our website and sign up for our emails, because we let you know what's going on, and we create the actions for you to, within a click or two, email your legislator directly, and we give you all the talking points, and we have letter to the editor things on our website that you, all you have to do is enter in your zip code, and we pull up all the newspapers in your area, and then we send it off to them. So we are really trying hard to get our grassroots up, because I will tell you, legislators, honestly, they really do respond, and they care about what their constituents think. They're all thinking about that.
Well, Josh, you've covered a lot of territory, but I do want to encourage people to go to your website. Again, that's familyfoundation.org. And you also have a telephone number, I think, where people can reach you. What is that?
804-343-0010.
Right. And on that website, by the way, I just clicked on this Medicaid expansion thing. It works very well. Go to that website. Also, I think you're hosting a pastor summit in Richmond in September. There's information on the website about that as well. So, Josh, we could keep on going, but we've come to an end. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. Well, this concludes our program about the clash of values in the Virginia General Assembly with our special guest, Josh Hetzler, Legislative Counsel for the Family Foundation of Virginia. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway. If you're looking for help with your chimney or your teeth, please give them a call. And we thank so many of our listeners for your prayers, your encouragement, and financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
This is the day.
Rejoice, 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 rej